From the Mutual Broadcasting System, this is STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Now, retired Marine Intelligence Officer and globally recognized risk expert, Hal Kempfer.
Okay, well, welcome to STRAT, and I have a little different strategic risk assessment talk today. Actually, I'm going to touch on some stuff I've touched on before, but I'm bringing them up because they're right back at the forefront of the news. And I've been hearing a lot of stuff. Well, first off, kind of back up a little bit. President Trump, as you may recall, has deployed National Guard forces into Washington, D.C., that federal district, that kind of unique federal entity that we call Washington, D.C. And more recently, he has also said, or Secretary Hegseth has said, they will be armed, which is not extraordinary for National Guard troops to be armed, to include being armed within the United States for a variety of reasons. But with all that said, he made some reference to, and Chicago and New York City might be met next. And that is what I want to talk about, because that is where, you know, first off, there are some significant limitations on what they can do in Chicago or New York City compared to what they're doing in Washington, D.C., so I want to cover that. The other thing I want to talk about, though, is some of the stuff that's been out there where I've heard some rather undisciplined political rhetoric being tossed out there, some things that I find rather shocking, to include some rather progressive governor saying stuff that would find, great solace with some of the most far-right anti-government extremists in U.S. history. And I just want to kind of get into the depth on that, or get into that and talk about it, because I just find some of the rhetoric to be kind of loose. And I thought it'd be a good chance here to kind of go in and talk about what is allowed. First off, there's nothing unconstitutional about federalizing National Guard troops to help restore law and order in the streets of major cities. There are limitations and there are rules on how it's done, but there's nothing inherently unconstitutional. I want to bring up the fact that if you go back to, back to the riots in Los Angeles in the early 90s, following the acquittal of white LAPD officers who were beating an African-American man, Rodney King, that was caught on video and broadcast around the U.S., that acquittal resulted in very violent riots in the city of Los Angeles. National Guard troops were brought in by the governor under state status. Under state status, not federal, but state, those guard troops could actually do law enforcement functions. They could arrest people. They could, go out there and, if they want to, conduct investigations, they could collect evidence, they could do all these things that we would consider normal law enforcement. However, they have to be paid for by the state to do that. They're not in federal status. The governor at the time looked at it and said, well, I could put these guys in federal status and then we don't have to pay for them with the state money, which he did. And as one two-star general, National Guard general I know very well said, I went from doing 84 missions to 4, maybe 6, because it once you federalize, a whole bunch of stuff they can't do. And so they did federalize it. Now, with that said, there were federal troops, there was federalized National Guard troops, there were federal troops like Marines that came from Camp Pendleton that were up in Los Angeles, and they were working side by side with local law enforcement, LAPD, LA County Sheriffs, other police departments and elsewhere, providing security for those forces. And what that did is it basically a force multiplier, if you will. Two police officers come in, backed up by, a half dozen soldiers or Marines. And it makes it a lot easier for those two officers to do what they have to do in that type of threat environment. So that's what they were doing. And there was nothing illegal about that. The governor had requested them to come in. They were brought in to do that. They did not have to invoke the Insurrection Act or anything like that to do it. It was just in support of civil authorities, and that was perfectly okay. Now, if an officer had said, hey, go arrest that person, that would have been a violation of posse comitatus, and they couldn't do it. But if somebody came and attacked the officer, and that soldier was to tear him off the officer and take them to the ground and put them on flex cuffs or whatever and detain them, that is perfectly acceptable under posse comitatus. That is not a violation of federal law, all right? In 2001, after the 9/11 attacks, you may recall that Federalized National Guard were deployed in a variety of transportation things. The most visible, of course, was you saw them at airports, basically patrolling, and they had some very strict rules of force. In fact, in some cases, which got a lot of criticism, they would walk around not only without a round chambered for firing, but they didn't even have the magazine inserted into their weapon. But they were a force, they were a deterrent to terrorists, and that's what they were there to do. We can discuss all day whether they were worth, whether that was a worthwhile mission or not, but that's what they were there to do. In 2005, in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, federal troops were sent to New Orleans. One of the reasons the governor couldn't send a lot of state active duty National Guard troops was because of Operations Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom had those many of those troops deployed. So federal troops were sent in. They actually walked the streets of New Orleans with their weapons, just like what they're talking about doing in Washington, D.C. And they were patrolling there. But again, they had very strict rules on what they could do. They could use their weapons to protect themselves or to protect others around them. But they couldn't go arrest people. They couldn't kick in doors and go in and search houses and collect evidence or anything like that. They were there primarily as a deterrent force to provide immediate security presence in wherever they were, but they were not there to conduct law enforcement functions. If you go to 2020, in the midst of the pandemic, we had federalized National Guard troops deployed to Washington, D.C. because there were protests on the streets. Those protests never became riots or violent, in large part because there were so many federalized National Guard troops on the streets. Some had deterred that, but they were there, and that was perfectly legit. That was what they were doing back then, was very not that far afield from what they're doing now. All right. And in 2025, this year, we had federalized National Guard troops in Southern California protecting federal property, federal facilities, federal personnel, federal law enforcement personnel who were out there conducting federal law enforcement missions. But they were not making arrests. They were not doing law enforcement functions. All right. And if you want to go back further, federal troops with fixed bayonets, no less, in 1932, attacked the Bonus Army, an army, if you will, of World War I veterans who were promised a bonus for fighting in World War I. They were in the midst of the Depression. They said, look, I don't need that bonus 10 years from now. I need that money now. And they had marched on D.C., and they were very well organized, and the army was called out to deal with them. Actually, they were under the command of Major General Douglas MacArthur of World War II and Korean War fame, and he actually told the troops, clear them out. They had these are World War I veterans. They had these very military-style encampments, and he told his troops, fix bayonets, get in there, and force these guys out, and they did. And there is some talk that they violated posse comitatus in doing that, which they might have. I'm not quite sure. Some historians are very sure that they did, but they moved them out. All right. In 1965, during the protests against Jim Crow, the civil rights protests, basically you had George Wallace, a famous segregationist governor in Alabama. Not the first time he'd had problems, but there were protesters, civil rights protesters, marching from Selma to Montgomery. He said, we're going to do nothing to protect those protesters. He sent out Federalized National Guard troops. President Lyndon Johnson sent out Federalized National Guard troops in that state to actually go in there and protect those protesters. All right. The governor did not like it. A couple years earlier, Governor George Wallace literally stood at the doorway of the University of Alabama because he did not want to allow African-American students to come in and study at the University of Alabama. He did not want to obey that court order. And he actually had National Guard troops under state status there to block those students and the federal marshals, deputy U.S. marshals that were escorting him, from actually coming into the building. At that point, President John F. Kennedy federalized those National Guard troops, and most famously, the commander turned around to the governor and said, sir, we got to let them pass. You need to stand aside. And the guard troops stood in the way, or basically stopped that racist segregationist governor from opposing federal order, federal court order, and federal law. All right. So if you look at when federal troops have been used, they have actually done some very, very good things in the past. They have actually, they come in and they actually have a very positive, and I would say it's certainly civil rights, they have a very positive history, which goes back to the origins of posse comitatus, if you will that. Now, the governors in California, Maryland, some other states do not like what President Trump is doing, and I can understand that, all right? However, they keep interpreting states' rights, they keep referencing states' rights under the 10th Amendment and interpreting that. And I have to tell you, some of the things they're saying about sovereign rights of states would bring a smile to the evil, diabolical faces of Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. If you recall, they were the bombers of the Oklahoma City federal building, the Murrah Building. And I could think of a number of other anti-government, anti-corporate, violent, extremist, domestic terrorists. Sovereign citizens, freemen, as they sometimes call themselves, posse comitatus, actually using that name, that they actually would find themselves in stark agreement with, of all things, Governor Gavin Newsom of California and some other governors when they say this stuff. And that's where I think that there needs to be a little discussion. You know, states don't have a blank check on sovereignty. There are limitations under the Constitution. They're very well established. And it is a very common practice within the federal government to utilize state agencies and instrumentalities of federal agencies when they manage funding. Now, within the Department of Defense, the element there is the National Guard Bureau, which is a federal thing, all right? But within the National Guard Bureau, all the states have their own National Guard units. This goes back to the founding of the Republic. The state militias. The militia is actually in the Constitution. The right to keep and bear arms, the Second Amendment that all the gun rights folks talk about, actually talks about an organized militia. That is the National Guard, all right, when you actually get into that. And the states have National Guard units. The National Guard units are formed on a federal principle of allocating different units around the country based on what they can best support within those various states and territories, and that's how that's set up. Now, within that, the governor does have the right, even though those forces are federally paid for, the federal government pays for those forces to exist. They would not exist, dubiously if they would exist, outside of the federal government paying for their everything, their facilities, uniforms, weapons, you know, pain allowances, all that stuff to train, everything. That's what they do. However, the governors can actually pull them up on state active duty status, pay for their operations, pay for their pain allowances, and have them do state missions. When they're in that state status, they can actually perform law enforcement missions, and that's something different. But that doesn't stop the federal government from federalizing them. And this idea that somehow federalizing National Guard units when the governors don't want them federalized is unconstitutional is just not correct. That is, I did this for years. For decades, I've been involved in this stuff. That is not correct. That is flat out wrong when they're saying that. All right. Now, Posse Comitatus Act says, and I'm going to read this, whoever accepting cases and under circumstances expressly authorized by the Constitution or Act of Congress willfully uses any part of the Army, later this was expanded to include the Air Force, as a posse comitatus or otherwise to execute the laws shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 2 years or both. In other words, if you violate posse comitatus, you can go for 2 years. When I was working counter-drug intelligence support for law enforcement back in the 90s, this was drilled into us every time we checked in. They said, do not violate this or you can go to the Huskow for 2 years, up to 2 years. And by the way, it was very rigorously enforced. But I did a lot of things working side by side with law enforcement, you know, looking at all sorts of things, evidence, all sorts of things like that. I couldn't keep it. I didn't go out and collect it directly, but I could do a lot of things in terms of analyzing, assessing it, providing assistance to them in other ways that was perfectly legal under the law. Now, the Air Force was added after the Air Force was established. They weren't around in 1878. Navy and Marine Corps abide by this, although they're not expressly talked about in the original act. There was things added to this later on. Now, What does this mean? Posse comitatus. It's a Latin term which means power of the county. If you actually get into it, it means the entire body of the inhabitants who may be summoned by the sheriff to assist in preserving public peace, such as in a riot, or in executing a legal precept that is forcibly opposed, including under the common law, of every male inhabitant who is, if you really want to go back originally, who is above the age of 15. Wow. And is not infirm. Okay. Or it can be interpreted as a body of persons so summoned. Basically, back then, if you want to go back historically, you know, the counties would have a sheriff. Sometimes the cities would have a sheriff or marshal. And they didn't have a large law enforcement body. So they would go out there, like you see in the old Western movies, raise your right hand, and they would get sworn in. Hence the term sworn officers. And they would go out there as a posse to assist the sheriff in doing law enforcement things. You know, in the 1870s, 1880s, when you see all these old Western movies going on, most of those guys that they raised their right hands were Civil War veterans who had served in the military during that great, you know, that big war, that, you know, that great conflict. And so they actually, you know, knew their way around weapons and knew what to do. All right. They were military veterans. That's another thing I get kind of irritated to is I hear a number of these folks pop up on the television saying that the National Guard troops don't understand how to do all these things that law enforcement does. And I would say, no, they understand civil authorities. You get trained in this stuff all the time. Yes, they don't hook up handcuffs to guys on a regular basis. That's not what they do, unless they're MPs and they work on a military base, in which case they can hook up handcuffs. But I can tell you, we took folks, military folks, and we trained them in a couple, 3 weeks to perform the roles of military police on base. Not as good as sending them to the full training course on how to do that. They weren't great at, you know, some of the things, you know, you pay to play or whatever, but you pay a price when you don't give them, the, you know, give them three weeks of training versus, say, 3 months of training or 4 months of training. But, you know, they did okay. They were fine. So that's something that they can do, not as a regular thing, but, yeah, they can do that. Now, there are beliefs that Posse Comitatus believes that the highest law enforcement authority in the land is the sheriff. They have some very bizarre interpretations about the Constitution. They believe that the federal government is a big corporation and that any states that subordinate themselves to that corporation are corporate states. And they believe the only legitimate law enforcement authority in the land is the sheriff, the elected sheriff. Unless, of course, the sheriff is out there enforcing what they consider illegal, unconstitutional laws passed by the state or the federal government. All of this was kind of towards never paying federal income tax. That's what was really driving the whole thing, is nobody wanted to pay income tax. All right. Sovereign citizens, same beliefs, anti-government, anti-corporate. Freemen believes, you know, if they get pulled over by a police department, by the way, that police officer usually represents an incorporated city and a corporation, all right? If they get pulled over by state troopers, they will not always, but very commonly, they will not roll down their windows, they won't give them a driver's license, they'll do all sorts of stuff, saying, I'm a free man traveling across the land, I do not recognize your authority, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, these are some pretty radical extremists. They are anti-government extremists. And when I hear rhetoric from elected governors and stuff, which matches what these guys are saying, I find that very disturbing. And that's why I'm saying this. All right. Now, what they can't do is they can't arrest people. They can't hold evidence. So, for example, in the 90s, I would look at evidence all day long. I would look at a variety of things. But I couldn't keep that evidence. I could not be in that chain of custody for that evidence. I was simply providing support in terms of analyzing, assessing, doing a variety of intelligence-related things tied to that, what they have. But I wasn't in the chain of custody. I wasn't out there as a sworn peace officer, you know, controlling that whole thing. I wasn't going to go testify in court on this stuff. I was just providing support for what they were doing and working side by side with them. All right, now, could they do that? Well, in the case if the president was to declare the Insurrection Act, yeah, they could do that. They could actually, that's a case where, you know, under the Insurrection Act, which is an act of Congress, I should mention, that provides an exception for the president to say, yes, you can go in and do certain law enforcement things that you otherwise couldn't do because there's an act of insurrection that has overwhelmed the capabilities of local or state law enforcement or civil authorities. Therefore, he can do it. All right. But the reality of the law, it is not illegal or unconstitutional to federalize military troops and send them to a major city. In fact, when I heard a very big city mayor talking about, well, we don't want we don't want federal, and they were just talking about federal law enforcement. They said, we don't want federal law enforcement, in so many words, coming to our city to enforce federal laws. It's like, well, that's great, but you don't have that decision. Your city is part of the United States of America, as is that state. And by the way, there are certain things the military can do very well, like intelligence, like I used to work with. I think we're exceptional in doing that. I think we're world class. We're better than certainly anybody else out there. Logistics, communications, and a variety of other things supporting civil authorities that we are very good at. That's why when you have disasters, it's very very common that they will send out federal forces to go out there, and federal military forces, because they have capabilities, and National Guard troops as well. All right, and I'll give you an example. We're good at finding things, and we're good at working in the field. We're good at intelligence and surveillance and collecting intelligence stuff. We did support of NASA after the Space Shuttle Columbia disaster in 2003. Military was out there working in support of NASA, looking for any debris that came from that shuttle that I think was spread over like three or four or more states. And that was a very extensive thing. Military was very good in providing that. Military has always been good at providing support for firefighting. That traditionally, you go back, National Forest, National Parks, Bureau of Land Management, all these federal lands, the military would be routinely brought in to do that. If you want to go back to the origins of the National Park Service, which, by the way, is after the passage of the Posse Comitatus Act, the park ranger role was actually performed by federal military troops. You know, famously in California, that included Buffalo Soldiers. A very famous thing up in Yosemite, that they were providing federal law enforcement. All right. So this is what I just to kind of sum it all up. All right. Is to say, I want to kind of cut through the political rhetoric and just kind of get to certain ground truth on using military, federalized National Guard or federal military in certain roles in support of civil authorities. It can be done. Federal troops can support other federal agencies. That can be done. There are certain things they can't do unless something like the Insurrection Act is enforced, but there's a lot of things they can do. And I say this, I also want to say that when I hear rhetoric out of Washington, D.C. that says the federalized National Guard troops and the Marines in Los Angeles quelled the riots and stopped all the stuff, I'm like, nah, that's not what they were doing. They did provide security to federal law enforcement personnel performing federal immigration law enforcement missions, but I don't recall them quelling any riots other than, yes, when you have federal military forces there in uniforms with weapons and military vehicles, that tends to have a huge deterrent effect on those who might perpetrate violence against federal law enforcement or federal facilities. So yes, I will say in that regard, they did. But the rhetoric, I thought, was a little over the top on that. I think the rhetoric's come from the governors and some of the mayors, a little bit over the top and incorrect on that. And I just wanted to kind of put this down to say, look, you may not like it. You may dislike it. You may find it insulting to you as a big city mayor like Chicago or New York, where President Trump is talking about putting federalized law, National Guard troops there. You may very much be opposed to this on a variety of different levels, but depending on what they're doing, it's not unconstitutional. The president can federalize National Guard troops. All right, now there's another law called the U.S. Economy Act, which looks at the cost of that and whether it is cost effective. And I will say that rarely is using military the most cost effective option for things like that. But that does put a time clock on that. Say if it's an exigent situation, yes. But over time, you have to bring them off active duty. And by the way, that's exactly what happened in Los Angeles. They eventually started demobilizing these forces or bringing them back. And I was like, yeah, it's because somebody back there, some bean counter, was looking at the cost. And they said, okay, you no longer can justify this as an exigent situation. You have to change it. Hey, thanks for listening to this this particular episode of STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Went over a lot of things. Please don't hesitate to go to stratpodcast.com or go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kempfer TV, or you can go to my website at gripsa.com. That's GRIPSA.com. And you can get access to any of this stuff. And I'm regularly on a variety of television networks, television stations and stuff, used as a national security analyst, homeland security analyst, talking on a variety of topics to include this very topic here, which I felt very strongly needed to be addressed.